the disease tonight, and I look around, I believe it's about, how about the same people tonight who had this morning. We're glad to see all of you again this evening. We want to turn to Leviticus, book of Leviticus, the sixth chapter, and we'll read several verses, 8 through 13, to introduce our lesson for tonight. Verse 8 says, "And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command Aaron and his son, saying, This is the law of the burnt offering. It is the burnt offering because of the burning upon the altar all night unto the morning. And the fire of the altar shall be burning in it. And the priest shall put on his linen garment and his linen breeches shall he put on his upon his flesh. And take up the ashes from the fire hath consumed with the burnt offering on the altar. And he shall put them beside the altar. And he shall put off his garments, and shall put on other garments, and carry forth the ashes without the camp unto a clean place. And the fire upon the altar shall be burning in it. It shall not be put out. And the priest shall burn wood on it every morning, and lay the burnt offering in the order upon it. And he shall burn thereon the fat of the peace offering. The fire shall ever be burning upon the altar. It shall never go out." Sometime back, I was reading this in my daily Bible reading, and I thought, well, that'd be some excellent parallels to make here to our lives today. So our lesson tonight has to do with what I call keeping the Lord's fire burning. Keeping the Lord's fire burning. Christians need the Old Testament. We need a knowledge of the Old Testament because, not to keep the commands of the Old Testament, because we know that Colossians chapter 2 tells us that he blotted out the handwriting of ordinances that were against us and contrary to us, and took it out of the way and nailed it to the cross. So the ordinances or the commands of the Old Testament are not applicable to us today. We know that to be so. And so he says, "For that reason, we'll let no man therefore judge you in regard to meat or to drink, respect to the holy day or new moon or the Sabbath days, which are the shadow of things to come, but the body of Christ." But the fact that they're the shadow of the things to come indicates that they've been that shadow, that there's something there that we need to know so we can know the antitype of it. We can know more about that which is to come when we see the shadow of it. But we need to know it in order to help us to understand the Old Testament. The book of Hebrews, for example, would be almost impossible to understand without some reference to the Old Testament, some knowledge of the Old Testament. And we might understand the surface knowledge of it, but to get any deep knowledge of it, you need all the references made back to the Old Testament and parallel them to the New Testament dispensation in order to understand that book. And there are other references, of course, the references to the prophets of the Old Testament that's in the New Testament that point forward to Christ and point forward to the church. We just need that knowledge of the Old Testament, because in those there are examples, there are types, and there are shadows that the New Testament writers tell us to look at them and look at those things, because they're an example to us. In 1 Corinthians 11, 10, verse 11, "Now all these things happen unto them for examples, and they are written for our admonition, upon the ends of the world to come." He just got through talking about Moses and all of the children of Israel escaping from the Egyptian bondage into the freedom of the wilderness, and all that took place after that, they're murmuring in the various sins they committed. He said all those things happen for examples to us. So Paul made use of the Old Testament in order to teach us a lesson. And that's a way that we can make use of the Old Testament, is take some of those examples like that and seeing how God, as we sometimes say, dealt with people of old, and learn from that how he deals with us today. Things written aforetime were written for our learning and for our admonition, the Roman letter tells us. And he, even in Hebrews chapter 4, he compares the rest of Canaan to the rest of heaven, and he says, "Let us labor therefore to enter into that rest, lest any man fall after the same example of unbelief." Of unbelief of the Old Testament. So the Old Testament foreshadows the new. In that respect, our worship and service unto God was foreshadowed by the priestly service of the Old Testament. And what I read in the text a few minutes ago had to do with the priest and the altar and the burning of the burnt offering upon the altar. And it foreshadowed the New Testament. The Old Testament had their Levitical priest, and then they had their high priest, who of course was Levi as well. But it foreshadowed Christ. The high priest foreshadowed Christ as our high priest, and the other priest foreshadowed our relationship with the Lord as Christians, because we're told in 1 Peter 2 and verse 5 that we are a living stone, built a spiritual house, but we're also a holy priesthood. A holy priesthood. And down in verse 9, he says, we are a holy nation, a peculiar people, but it also says, we are a royal priesthood. And so it foreshadowed our priestly office, if you please, as Christians. Every Christian is a priest, foreshadowed by the priest of old, and Christ being our high priest. And the sacrifices that they offered were fleshly sacrifices, but they foreshadowed the spiritual sacrifices that would be offered under the New Testament. For example, in the case of our Lord, being the high priest, the high priest under the Old Testament take the lamb that was to be given for the sins of the people, would kill the lamb outside the camp, carry the blood of the lamb into the Holy of Holies, and offer it there once a year for the sins of the people as a nation. And Jesus foreshadowed that when he was crucified on the cross as the Lamb of God. And then he, with his own blood as the priest, carried it into the Holy of Holies, which is heaven, and offered it once for all for us. And other priests offered various kinds of sacrifices. We offer sacrifices. We don't offer bulls and goats and lambs. We don't offer the blood of any of these. And we don't offer it up on a material altar. But foreshadowed, I offer spiritual sacrifices, which are said in the New Testament to be the fruit of our lips. And if you notice in Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 16, "For here we have no continuing city, but we seek one to come. By him, therefore, let us offer the sacrifice of praise continually. That is, the fruit of our lips, giving thanks to his name. But do good and to communicate, forget not." Or as one translation said, to share and forget, forget not. "For with such sacrifices, God is well pleased." So our sacrifice is in worship unto God and in service unto others. We're offering a sacrifice unto God. It was foreshadowed by the sacrifices they offered. And in Philippians 4 and verse 18, "But I have all and abound, I am full and received of Epaphroditus the things which were sent from you, an odor of a sweet smell, a sacrifice acceptable unto God." So they happened to Paul by those and sent it by Epaphroditus of the Philippians was a sacrifice acceptable, he says, unto God. So they offered spiritual sacrifices, and we offer spiritual sacrifices. Now, we don't offer it on a material altar, but with the altar of our hearts, and with our carrying out the desires of our heart in praying unto God and in doing service unto Him and unto others, we are in the fashion then offering sacrifices unto God in this dispensation. So we can parallel then some of the things that had to do with the Old Testament sacrifices with our service and sacrifice unto God. And so we're going to focus now on the fire that's involved in it, and we're going to look at it as the fire of our hearts. Our hearts should be on fire for God. And so this Old Testament priesthood story that we just read earlier, it can serve as a type for us today. And the first point we would make in this, as we go back and look at that story, or that account of the priest in Leviticus 6, is first thing is do not put out the fire. Look at verse 12 again. And the fire upon the altar shall be burning in it. It shall not be put out. And the priest shall burn wood on it every morning. Lay the burnt offering in order upon it, and he shall burn thereon the fat of the peace offering. So he said, it shall not be put out. So they were not to deliberately put the fire out. It was to burn continually. And today, we're not to put the fire of our hearts out as far as our service unto God's concern and offering spiritual sacrifices unto Him. But we can and often do if we're not careful. We can put it out with the cares of this world. As we've noticed in other lessons, Matthew chapter 13, concerning the parable of the sowers, we noticed some of it this morning. He also that received seed among the thorns, is he that heard the word, and the care of this world, and the deceitfulness of riches, choke out the word, and he becometh unfruitful. By the deceitfulness of riches and the care of this world, one then puts the fire out in his heart for serving God, for sacrificing unto Him. People become just too involved in things. And becoming too involved in things, sometimes they can put out the spiritual fire. Sometimes they're too involved in business affairs. They get wrapped up in business affairs and get so involved in them that they don't have time for the Lord. And they don't have time to think about the Lord. They've got to think almost 24/7, at least all their waking hours during that time. They feel like they have to think about their business and how to keep it going, how it's going, and what to do about their business affairs. Well, you can go overboard with that and put the fire of the Lord out in your heart because you just don't have any time to pray and to study and to attend to things that are spiritual in nature. And sometimes it's because of family affairs. Sometimes because of family affairs, I've known folks who just quit the church because of family affairs, because they just didn't have any time left after they took care of family affairs to come and serve the Lord. Sometimes young families will do that. We don't have that problem much here. But sometimes young families will do that. They'll get involved in Little League. Nothing wrong with any of these things I'm going to mention within themselves, if they're in right proportion, the priorities are straight. But they get involved in Little Leagues, get involved in school things, and in sports, and all of the things that all of us enjoy. But they get so involved in those things, and then anymore, especially, a lot of the scheduling of these activities are that people don't pay any attention to the weekend or don't pay any attention to Wednesday night. They just go ahead and have those things. The world doesn't think that much about it. And sometimes families will get so involved in this activity or that activity and running from this place to that place, they just don't have time to take out and worship the Lord. either publicly or privately. And by doing that, they really put the fire out, because when you get all those things crowded into your heart, there's no room, there's no fuel for which the fire of the Lord can burn, because it's taken up with all these other things. And the same, of course, is true of community affairs, club meetings, things of that nature, and social affairs, this party or that party, and on and on as it goes. It's just characteristic all over that a lot of folks who otherwise might have been faithful Christians have put the fire out in their hearts because they've just gotten too busy in things that doesn't have anything to do with going to heaven. And they don't have enough time to take out and to do any meaningful work or any meaningful service to the Lord. And by doing that, they really put the fire out in their hearts as far as God is concerned. And, of course, not only the cares of this world, but also with the sins of this world. Now, notice the things that I mentioned earlier were not sinful within themselves. The cares of this world were not sinful within themselves, but were made sinful by the emphasis and the proportion which folks got tied up in them. They choked the Lord out and became sin because of that. But also the various sins of the world, things that are wrong. He says, "Love not the world, neither things in the world. If the love the if any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life, is not of the Father, but of the world." Many are so involved in the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eye, and the pride of life. And because of their lust, that occupies their mind. Because it doesn't have to be, as we sometimes use the term lust generally in a sexual way, but you can just, lust, it means to an inordinate desire. We can desire many things that we ought not to be involved in, and have lust in that way. And of course, the lust of the eyes and the pride of life. We can choke out the word in that respect and put the fire out. And certainly, if we're going to be involved in things that are characterized as lust of the flesh, the lust of the eye, the pride of life, whatever they may be, if we're going to be involved in those things, the fact of the business is, in order to become involved in those things, we're going to have to put the fire out to do it, because we cannot do it constantly if we leave the fire of the Lord burning within our hearts. And some of it involves sinful attitudes. Sometimes we can have a defeatist attitude. We just can't do it. We just can't do it. No matter the Lord helps. No matter the Lord strengthens. No matter the Lord is with us. Sometimes we just throw up our hands in defeat. And we do not try. But it may be. It may be that we try and we fail. But let's be sure that when we fail, and I put fail in quotation marks, that when we fail, it's not because of any lack of effort on our part, but the failure has to do with the soil that we're having to deal with, and not the sower of the seed that's doing the sowing. But if we go into any endeavor, whether it be the work of the church or anything else, if we have a defeatist attitude, then we're not apt to do a whole lot. So if we're not careful, we'll put the fire out with that attitude, that negative attitude, that we can't do it, we can't get things done. But God leaves us instructions throughout the New Testament that it's our business to sow. He says it explicitly, but the press was taught several times. Explicitly one time he says, I planted, Apollos watered, God gave the increase. So it was Apollos and his business to do the watering, and then and the planting of the seed, and then God would take care of the other. But if we approach it with the idea, well, it just can't happen, then we'll never know whether or not it can be done or not, because we just don't try. And then there's the hypercritical attitude, not hypocritical. That's a bad one, too. But hypercritical. And by hypercritical, I mean that we're just so critical of everything and everybody, and especially our brothers and sisters in the church, that we defeat the church, the work, defeat the influence it can have, because we are so critical of minor things that have nothing to do with sin, and we get so wrapped up in our minds with that, that we can't worship the Lord acceptably, because instead of becoming involved in a sincere worship unto God, we're nitpicking about things that don't matter and become hypercritical. Hyper means extra, like a hyper child. Extra critical, too critical of others. I've heard the story some time ago, and I think maybe I've told it two or three times here, but most of us are at the age we've forgotten it already anyway, so I'll tell it again. Where there was a family that attended services one Sunday, and on the way home, the mother said, "I tell you, the singing sure did drag today. The song leader, he just doesn't have it." And the dad said, "Yes," and he said, "The preacher was just too long-winded. He just doesn't have it." Little boy sitting in the back seat, and he said, "Huh." He said, "I think it's pretty good. All of us got in for a quarter." So he knew what they contributed. So he said, "We pretty good. We got in for a quarter on that." That's the type of thing I'm talking about. Being just overly critical of one another and overly critical of the service. There are a lot of things that need to be criticized. Don't misunderstand. Among those who profess to be brethren. But we don't want to get into the mode of just nitpicking every little thing to the point that we really crowd out, we really put out our fire for the Lord by our hypercritical attitude and our antagonistic attitude. The attitude that we're on, almost like we're on different opposing teams, and that everybody is antagonistic toward one another. And that should never be either. When we're Christians, and especially members of a local congregation, we ought to at least consider that we're mean to be at least on the same page, that we try to be on the same page, and rather than look at it as an adversarial relationship that we have with others, we have a brotherly relationship. And if we become antagonistic and hypocritical, well, and hypocritical either, we then would put out what fire we have for the Lord in our hearts. Sinful attitudes, along with sinful actions, will put the fire out. The second thing we note in Leviticus 6 is not only are you not to put out the fire, you do not just let it go out to neglect. Look at the 6th chapter, verse 13. "The fire shall ever be burning upon the altar. It shall never go out." So that puts responsibility upon them not only to not snuff it out, but to make sure that it was a fuel and there was wood there to burn, and you just kept it burning. If you remember back when we all had fireplaces, when we were young, most of us did, had fireplaces. A lot of times at night, we just kindly have the back stick on, let it be burning, kind of put ashes around it and let it continue to burn during the night. The next morning, rake the ashes away and then put more wood on, and it would continue to burn. That was not always the case, but a lot of times we did that. Well, we were having our fire burning continuously in that respect. And they on the altar was to allow the fire to continue to burn on it day and night. But we can let it go out. And by letting it go out, by doing that, the way that we do it, rather, is not keeping it fueled. If you don't put the wood on the fire, it's going to go out. In fact, the book of Proverbs uses that as an illustration on one occasion about backbiting and gossip. And he talks about how that if you take the fire, the wood away from the fire goes out. And if we don't fan the gossip, it'll go out. But anyway, we have to keep it refueled. And we do that in the spiritual way by keeping our minds renewed spiritually. Look at 2 Corinthians 4:16. For which cause faint not. Now, what he's saying there, don't faint. Don't just fall away. Faint. But though the outward man man perisheth, yet the outward man, the inward man rather, outward man perishes, the inward man is renewed day by day. We have to renew the inward man day by day. And we are to not let that go out. We renew it spiritually each day. And in Romans 12:12, be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good, acceptable, and perfect will of God. This is right to the Christians. And he says to those Christians, be not conformed to the world, but be transformed. How do you transform? By the renewing of your mind. You have to keep it refueled. You have to keep studying. You have to keep practicing what the Lord said to do, day on a day-to-day basis. And as a church, we have to keep practicing the Lord's will and not neglect it, or else we're going to let the fire go out. And we do that one way is by study and meditation. As newborn babes, he said, desire the sincere miracle of the word that you may grow thereby. We have to have a continual feeding so that we can grow. And study to show ourselves approved is that passage we use so many times. And then, blessed is a man who walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, but are standeth in the way of the sinners, nor in the seat of the scornful. He goes on to tell us that his delight is in the law of the Lord. His law does he meditate day and night. All of that, day and night renewal, will keep the fire from going out. In other words, if you're going to keep the fire burning, you've got to attend to it. You have to attend to it. We're talking about that fireplace you had. If you didn't tend to the fire, you didn't keep the wood there, then it's going to go out. And so if we don't keep the wood, and somebody said the wood dry and ready to burn, if we don't keep that, then our spiritual fire is going out. And we do it by benefiting from mutual edification, by edifying one another. Let us consider one another to provoke unto love and good works, he says in Hebrews 10 and verse 24. And in verse 25, not forsaking the assembly of yourselves together as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. So we exhort one another even when we assemble ourselves together. All of that is to keep the fire burning in our hearts for the Lord, so we can offer unto him spiritual sacrifices while we live here. In the third chapter of Hebrews 12:13, take heed, brethren, lest there be an interview in the evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God. But exhort one another daily, what is called today, lest any be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. Continual exhortation to do better, to stay faithful, to live for the Lord, All of those things we can do to each other. And in doing that, we keep the fuel burning within the hearts of Christians. But something else about fire, sometimes you have to stir it up. It has to be stirred. I go back to my illustration of the backlog. When that back stick you put on the fire, it may be burned halfway through the night, and when you went in to kind of get the fire going again, first thing you do is stir it up. You stir those coals up, get them to burning, and then if it begins to, after you put wood on it, and it begins to kind of, the flame begins to go down, and it seems like it's about to go out, get that poker. You stick it in there, and you stir it again. You keep it stirred so that it will keep burning. And we do that spiritually by having our memories stirred up from time to time by the word of the Lord. 2 Peter chapter 1, 12. Wherefore, I will not be negligent to put you always in remembrance of these things, though you know them, and be established in the present truth. Yeah, thanks to me, as long as I'm in this tabernacle, stir you up by putting you in remembrance. Knowing I must shortly put off this tabernacle, is our Lord Jesus Christ has shown me. So he said, I'm going to stir you up, stir your memory up. And we need to be stirred up every once in a while. Our memory needs to be stirred up. And we need to stir up our zeal occasionally. It begins to get low, and our desire to serve the Lord begins to get low. Read the scriptures and stir ourselves up, and stir one another up to do better. Need to be stirred into action. James is doing that in James chapter 1, when it says, whosoever looketh in the perfect law of liberty and continueth therein, being not a forgetful hearer, but a doer of the work, this man shall be blessed in his deed. He was stirring those folks up to, when they look in the law of liberty, that they not forget, but that they do what they have been told to do. And the Hebrew writer again in 5 and 14, be strong, but strong meat belongs to them of full age, who by reason of use have their senses exercised to discern between good and evil. We stir up by our exercising our senses to discern between good and evil. So it needs to be stirred every once in a while. We need to stir ourselves into action when we begin to get low in our spiritual zeal. And thirdly, do not swap it out. Not only are you not to let it go out or to put it out, but you're not to swap it out. Let's look now at the 10th chapter of Leviticus, chapter 10, the first few verses there. And Nadab and Abihu, the sons of Aaron, took either of them his censer, put fire therein, put incense thereon, and offered strange fire before the Lord, which he commanded not. They swapped the Lord's fire for a fire of their own, for that which was unauthorized. And so they were condemned for it. They swapped that which the Lord commanded for that which the Lord commanded not. The Lord's fire was authorized. And we can swap it out by swapping out our worship, which is our spiritual sacrifice unto God, swap it out for unauthorized worship. We're told in John 4 and 24 that we're to worship God in spirit and in truth. Our worship has to be in truth, that is, according to God's word. And Matthew 9, in vain they worship me, teaching for doctrine the commandments of men. So men will swap it out for the commandments of men, and we're not to do it. And for unauthorized work in the Lord's vineyard, we're told in Colossians 3:17, whatsoever you do in word and deed, do all in the name of the Lord, giving thanks to God the Father for him. What does it mean to do it all in the name of the Lord? It means do it by his authority. When you do something in the name of another, you do it by his authority. But if you swap your service for the Lord that's authorized by the Lord for that which someone else invented, that which someone else does or teaches, then it's swapping for an authorized work. And the fire of a decent, orderly, and thoughtful worship sometimes is swapped for some fires that are more appealing to the flesh. When we worship our God, it's to be in a decent, orderly way. It's to be thoughtful worship with our minds upon God and upon the purpose for our being there, like the Lord's Supper, for example. When we meet around the table, we emphasize quite often that we do it in an acceptable manner. That is, that we are discerning the Lord's body, that we are showing forth his death till he comes. So we need to make sure that we worship the Lord in that kind of way. But many times, people want to swap that out for something that's more exciting to the flesh, more exciting to the fleshly side of man, more exciting to them than just these five items of worship where we come together and very quietly and thoughtfully worship the Lord. And by quietly, I mean not necessarily silent, but quietly rather than in a boisterous pep rally type of service. It's one that's very tranquil, very quiet in that sense, and done in a decent and orderly manner. And he even told those who had the gift of tongues and the gift of prophecy that they need to do things in order. They didn't need to do them in an orderly way, and that all things should be done decently and in order. And he even told them that the spirits of the prophets are subject to the prophets. For God is not the author of confusion, but of peace in all the churches. Now, when he says not the author of confusion there, sometimes I think we fail to get the full import of that. What he's talking here about confusion and peace, he's not necessarily talking about confusion about differences and arguing about differences in the church, but confusion and peace is the difference between everything being out of control and being a hip hip hooray sort of situation to that of being a quiet, a peaceful worship in the assembly. And so he's not the author of confusion but of peace in all the churches of the saints or all the assemblies of the saints. But many have swapped that quiet worship for the fire of Pentecostalism. The Pentecostal movement, all of the gyrations and all that takes place in those services, that appeals to some folks. And they look at the church and they say, well, we're just dead because everything we do is so quiet and thoughtful, and we don't get all hipped up and we don't get all bass jumping happy. And so Pentecostals do. And then it fuels in the fire of emotionalism, everything based upon emotion rather than upon thought. Sensationalism, spontaneous worship rather than planned and deliberate worship. Though all those things, people will swap New Testament worship, which is orderly, which is has, and I will add planned, in an orderly fashion, where that you worship the Lord in peace and quiet and not in the excitability that goes with the fleshly side of man. And all these others are designed, Pentecostalism and emotionalism, sensationalism, and spontaneity in worship, all is to satisfy the felt needs of those who participate, rather than been centered upon God and having God be at the center of it and a quiet reverence for God as we perform the various acts of spiritual sacrifice that he's given us to do in the scriptures. So what we need to do is let the fire keep burning and keep the Lord's fire burning and don't let it go out. Don't put it out. Don't let it go out. And don't swap it out. The only way that we know how the Lord wants us to worship and serve Him is the way that you read about in the Scriptures. And we don't need to swap that for anything. You may be here, and subject some way to the Lord's invitation. If that's the case, then come while we stand and while we sing.